Welcome to the Acidic Features Podcast, brought to you by Acidic Film Productions.
Okay, all right. Got you. I'm ready.
Welcome back to the Acidic Features Podcast with your host, as usual, Eli Fridley, with my co-host Connor Ayers and Connor Murphy. Today we have returning guest Tommy Chong here for our 420 special. How are you doing today, Tommy?
I'm doing great. Just trying to find a decent joint holder.
Joint holder? All right. Well, we can give you a second if you need.
No, I'm fine. You go ahead.
All right. So for our first segment, we've got a little game. Each right answer, you take one hit. Every wrong answer, you have to take two hits. And to get the question right, you'll have to choose if the line was either Tommy's, yours, or one of his co-stars. And the answers count for all players. So let's say if Murphy were to get it wrong, everybody has to take two hits. That's just how it goes. And so the first one, we'll start off with a question for you, Tommy. So the line is, you know I could be your daddy. Yeah, I used to fuck a buffalo. So was that either yours, Chappelle's, or Cheech's?
It's mine.
Yes, Tommy it Song. Is yours. All right, so everyone has to take one hit.
Me too?
I cleaned my bong.
Yep, look at you. Yep.
Okay, got a hit. I found my joint holder.
Whoa, that awesome. Thing's cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. The second one, so Murphy, this one can be for you. All right. Don't put me in your fantasies. I don't even like being in your real life. Was that either Danny Masterson, who played Hyde in That 70s Show? Was it Chong, or was it Topher Grace, who played Eric?
That was for sure Hyde.
That was Hyde. All right, everyone take one hit. All right.
I used to watch That 70s Show every single day of every night.
And that's so cool. You look like a character on the show.
All right, Connor, this one's for you. Man, I can't believe you. Whenever you do this shit, coke happens. Was that Cheech, Chong, or Snoop Dogg?
I feel like it was Snoop Dogg.
Nope, wrong. That was Cheech. All right, two hits. So that's two hits right there.
I got it wrong.
Absolutely, you are.
Do you remember the line of the second line of that?
The second line?
No, I say, man, every time I do coke, you give me that every time you do coke rap.
Yeah, because it's not your fault, it's his fault. Yeah, no, that's a great line.
I love that line. That was one of the funniest ones ever.
All right. And then the last one for you, Tommy. So you want to come over to my place? Okay. I'll be here with balls on.
That's was that? Cheech. That was Cheech.
Really? That's Cheech? Nope. It had it marked as your quote. So that it could be wrong online.
That's wrong.
All right. You know what? I'll take three hits.
Cheech is the guy that always – but people always get us mixed up anyway, you know.
Okay.
They always think I'm Chong Cheech.
For misinformation. I'll take that one. I'll take three hits for misinformation.
Oh, good.
I'll throw us a little bit more in there. All right. So starting off on true or false, so the Jackson 5 would open for your band.
It's true.
That's true. Really? How many times do they usually open for you?
One time.
One time, what was that like?
Incredible.
Incredible? How young was Michael?
He was, I think it was probably around 8, 9, somewhere around there. 9. It could have been 9. But no, they only opened one time for us. And then we got him signed with Motown. And then they weren't opening for anybody after that. They were a star act.
Right, they were the big ones. They were the ones people were wanting to open for at that
point.
Yeah,
that's what happened. That's exactly what happened.
Absolutely.
But they did open for us one time though.
That's great. All right, and then number two.
True or false, your cellmate was the real Wolf of Wall Street.
That's true. I was writing my book, and then he decided to start writing his book.
That's right.
And I helped him. I give a little advice in the beginning, and then he went ahead and wrote a bestseller and a movie. It turned out to be a movie.
Yeah, that is absolutely crazy. What was it like? So he wasn't really known at the point when he was in jail as the Heidi as he is now. So when he was, you know, with you as your cellmate, did you know who he was when you had first got
here? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we everybody knows, you know, celebrities before they come, you know. And
right.
So I had an idea, you know, it was, but I really, the thing is, you don't care, you know. You don't right. care what people do when you're in jail. In fact, that's a no-no. You don't talk about
no.
you know, why you don't talk. They talk among themselves, maybe, but people, the last thing they say, in fact, we did an interview a couple of days ago, and we did a signing in Santa Cruz, and someone asked, the guy won a contest. He came up. They're talking to us, and one of them had just been in the same jail I was in, Tap.
Okay.
And Cheech asked him, said, "Hey, why were you in jail?" And that's a no-no in prison. You never ask anybody why they're there. If they want to tell you, that's their business. But the last thing you do is ask anybody anything. Really,
you don't go looking behind closed doors. That's not something you go.
Well, you're in there with criminals. You know?
Yeah.
So, you mind your own business. Yeah, you don't know right. why people are in jail. You know, it could be the mass murderer. You have no idea, and so it's not like the outside. In prison, you're just a prisoner. You have no rights. The only right you have is to move. And you better move fast or someone will move you, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the last thing you want to do it, you like, you know, people on the outside, you know, they got time to think of weird shit, you know, when weird things to ask. But when you're in prison, you're just going from one moment to the next, you know.
Yeah, there's always, you don't have like that independent thought of what could happen. You know what's going to happen because there's a routine every day what's going to pretty much happen. But
for sure, but you're always aware, you know, you're not in there with family. You're in there with with people, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the next one?
Connor?
True or false? You were supposed to play as a hyena in The Lion King?
That's true.
That is true. Really?
I turned it down.
Really?
You turned it down? Really?
Yeah. That? Because we were Cheech and Chong.
Okay.
And Disney was sort of anti-Cheech and Chong. You know?
Okay.
And this was a Disney movie. Now, I had no idea, you know, how hip it was. I just knew it was a Disney movie and they wanted me to be in it, but they wouldn't let Cheech and Chong be in their theme park, you know, let alone, you know, back then, let alone do a movie for him. So I said, no, I'm not working for Disney. And so they got Whoopi Goldberg to do my part.
Yeah. Whoopi Goldberg. That's crazy, man. What a switch. Honestly, I wouldn't have expected them to go to Whoopi Goldberg after you were their choice, to be honest.
The problem with Disney, they weren't going because of who we were. They were just going because everybody knew who we were, you know, and they wanted to cash in on the Cheech and Chong thing.
Right.
At least that's the way I looked at it, you know.
Considering
you got to remember, whenever they ask you to be in a movie, it's for a reason, you know. It's because they know that a lot of people know who you are. Now Cheech did it and he's glad he did it. They made a shitload of money, you know. but had I to do it over again, I probably would have taken the part. I probably would have done it because it was such, it was, see, that's where I made a mistake. What you do, you check out the part first and to see if it's worth going through the other shit, you know.
And, so did you not look much into the part, or were you very?
No, I didn't look. I didn't look into the part at all.
Okay.
I said it was a Disney movie, and I said no. Disney, and the culture were at war. That's why.
I do. Yeah, no, that's understandable. So, for Number four, the 67 Volkswagen Beetle that you drive at the beginning of Up in Smoke was actually owned by Jack Nicholson. Is that true or false?
That is true.
Really? How did you guys go about getting that?
Well, Lou Adler, who directed Up in Smoke, and was our best friends with Jack Nicholson. They were best. They were best friends, and so when they read the script, where you know, I drive a beat up. I don't know if it was a Beetle. No, actually, they created that. I give them the character, and then they created the scenario. So they Lou and them actually wrote that part. And the grill of the Rolls Royce being on top of the, you know, on my Volkswagen. That was their gag, and that's why it was. And that's why they needed a Volkswagen, and Jack said, "Hey, I got one." And so that's how we did it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, did you get to go around and drive it all? You know, to be able to drive Jack Nicholson's car. Did you take that chance?
No. In a movie, you don't drive unless you're a Teamster. You don't.
Right.
You don't mess with any prop. Everything becomes a prop. And they guard it like it's their life, you know. Man. So you can't get near any vehicle. No, I've driven Volkswagens. I actually wanted a Volkswagen called the Thing.
Okay.
That was the Volkswagen I would have liked to have.
Goes on to strain of the day. Connor, would you like to take it?
Strain of the day is Miracle Alien Cookies, also known as MAC. Are simply miracle cookies. It's a hybrid strain made by crossing alien cookies with Starfighter and Colombian. MAC produces creative effects that are happy and uplifting. The strain has a smooth orange flavor that is balanced out by sweet floral earthy accents. Growers say MAC nugs are gorgeous and covered in resin. Medical marijuana patients choose the strain to help relieve symptoms associated with stress and depression, and those like me who just smoke it for recreational is amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah, Miracle Alien Cookies is definitely good. If you have it at your local dispensary, you should definitely go pick it up as soon as possible. Absolutely. So what are you what are you smoking right now, Tommy?
Fan dope, I guess. No, I don't know. What am I smoking? Good question. Weed.
Segment three, pod talk. So are there any actors that you had wanted to work with but never actually had the chance to work with?
Oh, yeah. Practically every one of them.
Really?
It's not so much the actor. The guy that got me into the movies was a guy... I always forget his name. Terrence Malick.
Okay.
He's a director that did a ton of movies. Badlands with Martin Scorsese is my all-time favorite movie. Right. I called him one time. We were looking for a director for Up in Smoke. And so I called Terry Malick, and he talked to me. And he said, "Nah, direct it yourself." He says, you got to direct it yourself. And so I did direct a lot of Up in Smoke and in every other movie after that.
That's amazing. That's crazy. Martin Scorsese is actually the one of his movies really got me into wanting to make movies. I always enjoyed the way he did it with the narration. Like,
yeah,
I remember.
But that's the director. And the writer, the director, you know, whoever writes and directs, that's the, you know, the whole industry, you know, produce everything. You're all needed. And that's what I'm going to be doing very shortly. I'm going to be back in the movie business big time.
that really got me into it. But Martin Scorsese is honestly one of my favorite directors. Like, one movie that people really tend to dislike is Shutter Island, apparently. I loved Shutter Island.
Yeah, me too.
I loved it, but everyone's always like, it's a terrible movie. And I'm like, you must just not like good movies. I remember, I think I had Connor watch it.
Yeah, Eli made me and my mom watch it while we were on shrooms. And it was a really
No,
it was just like, it was mind-boggling.
Oh, how was it? How was it? Good, bad?
Oh, it was like definitely one of my favorite movies. Good. Along with,
so it was good. What was the other one? You saw The Genius.
The other one, oh, Inception. Yeah, Inception. I had him.
Yeah, that one was good too.
And then he watched the first time he watched Goodfellas, he was on acid. Yeah. I remember that. He was on acid the first time he watched Goodfellas.
Who's that?
Connor. The one with no finger. Yeah. So that was pretty good. That one's one of my absolute favorite movies. I've watched that so many times. It's like, it's probably unhealthy. I'm not going to lie.
No, it's all good. It's all good. But, that's how you develop your movie chops, you know.
Yeah, honestly. So when you were last on, I had asked you what sequel you would want to make to a movie that you had starred in or directed, and you said Up in Smoke. Now, if you could remake or do a sequel to any movie that you have not starred in or directed, what movie would that be?
Good question. Oh, there's a movie called The Traveling Executioner.
Okay.
By Stacy Keach and Bud Cort. And that would be, I'd like to do a remake of that movie.
A remake. All right. Yeah. You know, what would your what would you have your wish list be for who would be in it? Like, you know, like a top five.
Oh God, yeah, good question. Well, you know, Tarantino.
Okay.
Scorsese.
Okay.
Yeah, all the directors. And what was my guy? Terry Malick. And throw in Ron Howard.
Ron Howard.
As an actor.
Okay.
These are all actors that I would like to be in a film.
Oh, so you want them to be the actors?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay, I was thinking you were almost doing like a writers or directors list. Actors, that would be really good. That would actually
all of them acting.
Okay. Yeah, no, that'd be very
interesting.
Not only acting, but improv.
That'd be pretty great. I'd love to see Quentin Tarantino do improv. That'd be great. That'd be amazing. It'd be funny if you did a remake with it like Django style, you know, so like if someone got hit, they just fly. Obviously it couldn't be like that, but that'd be amazing. Just to see Quentin Tarantino.
It could be.
Just look at him like, holy shit, did you see that?
And with movies, you can do anything.
Oh, that'd be freaking amazing.
You can do anything. You can do anything. That's the joy of movies.
That is true. That
there's no bounds. There's no rules.
You make the world.
But wouldn't that be a great movie?
No, really.
Having those guys. Wow.
I'd love to have like a series of movies of like improv movies of just those characters, like a series of improv movies of them like having different scenarios happen. That'd be freaking hilarious.
And you grew up with that 70s show?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
That was amazing. No. I remember when it was first, like, not first on. I remember when it was on, like, still on TV and cable, and my parents wouldn't let me watch it when I was super young. When I was really young, and I was like, fuck you, and I would still watch it. It's like the best show ever. I fucking loved it. And then it came to Netflix, and that was amazing. It was my favorite show.
Do you know that's called Stolen Lessons? Did you know that? The way your parents taught you or made you? They actually made you watch it. That's because funny. had they told you to watch it, you probably would have questioned it.
That's true.
But by telling you not to watch it. Now, did they do it? Did they do it on purpose or did they do it out of fear?
See, I'm not too sure. I don't think they were too worried about it because they aren't against weed or anything. I just feel like they didn't want me to take the wrong thing away from it. But when I was growing up, they always told me just don't do what you see in a movie and just watch it as a movie, you know? So, but like, I grew up, like, I remember being like 5-6 years old and I was watching like Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, that's the thing. I don't understand. I remember when I was like 10, I couldn't watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but then I could watch The Walking Dead.
I've never.
I was like, what are these rules? It doesn't make sense. Like, it's cool. I was like, what the fuck? What?
Because what they're trying to tell you is that reality is really much scarier than fantasy. That's what they're trying to tell you.
Nightmare on Elm Street is one of my favorite series. I actually have a Nightmare on Elm Street poster.
I can't watch those kind of movies. I haven't seen The Exorcist. There's a lot of movies I won't see because I don't want to have that imprint. I don't want to have that record in my collection.
Right. Yeah. No, I get that. I don't care to watch new horror movies anymore. Like, I have like the ones I grew up watching that I don't mind really. Like, I'd say like even Halloween and stuff like that. I thought those were pretty bad, but
did you enjoy them?
Not really. Halloween. I didn't actually like that much, especially with all the remakes. Oh my gosh, there were so many remakes. It was just so stupid. And then Friday the 13th had a lot of remakes too. I didn't like them, but I liked Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street, yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street was good. Especially, it's so fake looking. That's why it's not scary. Because, like, it's just a good story. It's so old. But, so, Murphy, would you like to take the next one?
Alrighty. Well, this is, like, two questions in one, actually. First, what musicians would you want to be able to play with?
Wow, any they have to be alive, you know. They can't be dead. Dead musicians, you know, they can't hold a beat, you know, they don't know any tunes.
They can't hold a beat, yeah, they can't get anything new.
Yeah, so they gotta be alive. And anybody. You know, I'm not fussy.
Okay.
Is there anybody you like enough that you would record a single with them?
Musicians?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just one.
Oh. I guess Billie Eilish.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
Billie Eilish, that's amazing.
Yeah. That's who I pick, because what you're doing when you're picking vocalists for the vocals, you're really picking an instrument. And what instrument would I like to be, you know, working with? And that's the sound. I like her sound. She's like a poet. More than a vocalist, you know what I'm saying?
I feel like that would be a really nice collab.
That'd be crazy. Yeah.
Well, she brings attention to lyrics. I'm a lyricist, so I like songs that concentrate on the lyrics. You know, just naturally. I can understand.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that'd be awesome. That's gonna happen.
I got a whole thing about lyrics, how the music can sort of make you forget the meaning of the song, because the tune is so cool and you know, so perfect, but the lyrics sometimes don't fit. And if you like a poet, if you really listen to lyrics like I do, because that's exactly my area. when you listen to the old songs, the way they used to do them in Vegas and that, it's kind of a joke. Like, again, I'm a comedian, so I'm going to look at the funny side of lyric writing. First rock and roll song ever made, it was the lyrics. They were so misogynist, you know, soul misogynist you couldn't read those lyrics. You can sing them, but you can't read them to the public because the lyrics are, get out in that kitchen and rattle those pots and pans. Get out in that kitchen, rattle those pots and pans.
Or even like Queen.
Because I'm a hungering man. You do me wrong. Let's see. Oh, the lyrics are just the guy going off on a chick and heavy times. They're so great. So being a lyricist, I've been enjoying the difference of our culture.
Okay.
You know, through song and lyrics.
That's great. Yeah. So have you for number four, have you ever been too high?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just weed.
Yeah. When you get nauseous.
You get nauseous?
Yeah, that to me, that's too high.
That's too high.
You know, when you're gonna throw up, you might throw up.
And how often would you say that happens? How often would you say that happens to you? Especially
No. I learned my lesson. It took me about maybe I know over a lifetime, maybe half a dozen, maybe six times, you know, maybe not even that. No. See, when you get old, you can't remember shit. there might have been, but in your mind, you know, serious events happen and then you sort of relate to where you were at that time. But no.
The last time that happened to me, I took a half gram dab. Was coughing for about 15 minutes.
That's not good. And coughing fits, you can't stop. That's horrible. Have you ever seen anybody in a laughing fit?
Oh yeah.
I know. Yeah. I mean, serious to the point where they were hurting.
Their stomach's broken, they can't breathe. Oh yeah.
Like you have to get them to stop laughing.
Yeah, and they can't. I saw this guy. I was an army cadet, and this guy told a stupid joke. It wasn't even that funny. And the guy started laughing so hard that he couldn't stop laughing. And he had tears, and it was like he was choking. There's a laugh impulse that went off the rails. And it was, And I think, you know, in the old days, you used to show insane people. Like that, you know, that insane laugh they call it.
Yeah,
it's the laugh thing, but I'm pretty there's sure, nothing.
I think laughing is like one of the most hard things to like control and stop. Like it's for some reason for humans it is extremely hard to stop laughter. And I don't know the science behind it, but I do know it's like one of the hardest things to just contain. And I do know that considering I've been to school and I'd look over and my friend would do some stupid shit to try and get me into trouble. And I'm sitting there trying not to like let out the biggest laugh. And that was always terrible.
You can get addicted to hearing him and being him. I know I am. I'm addicted. I'm a laughaholic.
Laughaholic.
In that sense, you know, where I'll turn everything I can into humor.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no.
And that's the great thing about being a comedian.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, yeah. Well, that's the art. That's a craft. And like all crafts, it's just a matter of doing it. Never stopping.
Connor, would you like to take the next one?
Yeah. Do you remember your first LSD trip?
I once asked an undercover cop that question.
Really?
and he gave the wrong answer. he said no. if you remember, you will remember your first LSD trip before you will remember your mother's maiden name.
That's for sure.
Yeah, no, that's true. That is true.
You cannot.
As long as it's bad.
You, you cannot lose those asset memories. They're with you forever.
I've lost a few. I did a lot. That's the thing. I did so much. It was unhealthy. That's for sure. I definitely remember my first. I remember, like, at one point, I was tripping so hard, I couldn't see patterns in it anymore. And everything was 10 times more still than anything had ever been. So, like, I even felt still. It was just completely just, boom, just dead. And, like, everything felt like a dead zone for a second because of how hard I was tripping. It was fucking phenomenal. It was amazing. I think it's, like, I'm pretty sure a lot of people see these, the bears, the dancing bears. You know what I'm talking about? I know Murphy knows what I'm talking about.
Talking about the Grateful Dead bears.
Well, yeah.
Oh, but, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You've seen, like, running around in circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a vision that you got.
A vision. Interesting. Year was that? Do you remember which year?
1964.
Yeah. Wow. That's a good year. That's a good year.
1964. Yeah.
Personally, I also want to ask you, what were the 50s like?
Very tough.
Tough.
You go to Cuba.
Cuba?
50, you know, there's 1950 cars in Cuba.
Okay.
And see, the reason the cars are in Cuba is that those cars were made by tough motherfuckers, you know, very tough people. Because it was during the war. See, everything you made during the war had to be war toughness, you know, like the Jeep or a tank, you know, have to be able to withstand everything. And so when they made the cars in the 50s, they made them tough. And the people were also very tough. It was a very violent, you talk about, there was no mass shootings. There's nothing like that. If there was anything, there was like self-defense kind of stabbings and wounds. So the people and the racial thing, the vibe was set. We had to have an enemy in the 50s because we just came from a war and all the Japs and all the Germans were enemies. And all of a sudden, they're not enemies anymore. And so in the 50s, the Pachucos or the Chicanos, they became the enemies of the Americans, of the white Americans. And so the Pachucos, instead of becoming, you know, meek, they started identifying their warlike tribe with their costumes, with their pants, with their hair. It was like they had like Iroquois natives, Indians, you know, that's how they had their hair, Iroquois cuts, to make them tell everybody they were badasses. And so the Chicanos, and so in the 50s, you had a lot of badasses. And the badasses were a lot of the military guys. After being trained in the military, they come out, they're racist. And so they're very violent. They're like punk rockers, you know. Okay. And so you would have those clash. And then you would have the police. And the police had to be badasses that would, you know, physically be able to handle themselves, you know, in that area. And the people were very, very tough. And there was a lot of things that started in the 50s, like Elvis Presley, and, you know, all sorts of things. But the quality of the people was very, very tough.
Very tough. What was your favorite music back in the 50s? What were you listening to?
I started out country. And then I ended up with rhythm and blues, soul music, just went from country to soul music, and then I stayed in the soul music, and then become jazz, but that's where I'm at now, and country, you know, not the old country. I was never a vocalist, so every time I learn a song, 3 months later, I have to learn it again.
Well, how do you feel about, like, the new generation and how...
I love them.
You feel
they're evolved. They're evolved. They're us, only highly evolved.
I feel like there's a lot of people more standing up for everybody now. So like, the people that the high racism before, because that's like how my great grandpa was. He was one of those post-war people, and
What was he? What was your grandpa?
He was in the Vietnam and also North Korean War.
And what nationality?
He was white, like German, and so he was extremely racist. But
I grew up with him.
Nowadays, people like that definitely get beat down, like verbally or physically.
They learn. You know, back then, that was the knowledge of the day. You know, that's how far the knowledge thing got, too.
The tables have, like, completely flipped.
Yeah, and they always do. And even before that, you know, there's always that them and us, you know, always. But that's just the nature of our planet, you know. You know, they always talk about Mars being the war planet, but think about it, Earth is really the war planet.
That's true. Yeah, that's for sure. So, Murphy, would you like to take the next segment?
Well, now that everybody is really baked, we're going to start stoner talk. And the very first question is, Tommy, do you believe in aliens?
Well, yeah, I do. I know they exist. Now the question is, I do believe in aliens. They exist. But do they exist in our particular time zone or light zone? Yeah. I don't think so. Because we're so minute in the order of the universe that I'm quite sure there are a lot more interesting places to fuck with. But see, you got to remember, when you reach that form of intelligence, think of a drone. Okay, now the drones were unheard of a few years ago, but so there's an evolution, and the cameras have evolved from being huge to being tiny, okay? So we're in the middle of evolution, and that was all just part of it.
Do you think aliens have visited us?
Yeah, but not in any kind of form other than drones. I believe drones have come.
You know? Okay, I see. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, they've sent. There's equipment has been sent to check out Earth, like we check out Mars. I'm assuming. Now, I had sort of an alien trip experience years ago in British Columbia. There was a ball of light hanging over Trail BC for 3 days. And 3 days, it was in the early 50s, late 40s. And I guess it'd be around 52, 53, around there. And it was a ball of light, you know. So, you know, it could be a drone, you know, from other planet. Because you think about how unique Earth is. I mean, we've had telescopes and everything else, but we have never found an oxygen-producing atmosphere that we have on Earth.
Yeah.
Anywhere in the known universe.
That's true.
So that's how unique we are. But if you can expand your mind further, you can think that this universe is only one of zillion universes.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. I know that we're in like the Goldilocks zone, which is like, you know, the zone where we aren't too close to the sun, so our atmosphere isn't like fried and everything. Our ozone layer can help us. But apparently one of Jupiter's moons might have oceans under it. I don't know if it's water, but I do know the fact that they're speculating that it has oceans under the crust of one of Jupiter's moons. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Now, does it have an atmosphere? No, it does not. But if there's water, that does mean the fact that there could be life, which means there could be sea life in Jupiter's moon. And I think that would be super interesting to see.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you're equating life with oxygen.
Oh, well, that's what I'm saying. So I don't know if it is what we like, if it's water.
That's, you're equating, it's called Earth life.
Yeah. So
this is where we are on Earth.
Then it would have oxygen bearing life, but it doesn't need to be. But that's the thing, life could be a germ. Like, it doesn't have to be an actual animal. That's the thing about alien life. It will not be anything like Earth unless it is an Earth like planet.
Could be a rock like creature.
Yeah, like it could be anything, but that's probably super cool. But so for the second one, the CIA released a document in 2003 due to the Freedom of the Information Act stating that we were living in a heat hologram and that astral projection is real. Would you believe anything that the CIA released on a subject that big?
Well, it doesn't matter who releases anything, you know, it's a press release. So yeah. We had some press people release it.
Yeah.
Everything is possible. Everything is possible. But everything is also improbable too. So I don't know. You know, the thing is, we as humans, we're very limited as to the scope of our universe, you know. So our perception, that's exactly what it is. I think if you can imagine it, then you can create it. It can be created. That's what I say, you know. Because so far everything, you know, they wanted to attribute the pyramids to aliens, but they found other evidence to say that, no, it was humans. Humans built all that. Humans moved those big boulders, and the way they did it, they just used gravity. Like in the Egyptian's tomb, they had this one little area where it's a little like a tunnel that shot right up to the Pleiades mountain, stars. And a lot of astronomers were trying to say, well, that had some kind of astrological alien meaning to it. But the truth is, that tunnel was for a cable made of hemp that would attach to a harness that would hold those huge cornerstones of the pyramid. And they built the pyramid with gravity and human energy, animal energy, grease, logs, and ingenuity, but mostly gravity, because at the end of that big thing was a counterweight, and that counterweight helped the slaves and everybody push that big boulder up, you know, just with a few people. Yeah. Not the way they showed, you know, they got hundreds of people and they're trying to push each other, I guess.
No, they had better ingenuity. I mean, I believe it was the Egyptians that first found out the diameter of the earth.
Yeah. And it was the Arabs that invented algebra. Algebra gave us a zero. So that knowledge, you see, is on earth, and it always has been.
Yeah.
And so we as humans, we're just catching up. We're in school. That's what we are. We all are in school.
Yeah, we're still just learning. That's for sure.
That's
Connor, would you like to take the next one?
If you like found an alien, would you befriend it or would you kill it?
I think it would. Oh, of course. Of course. I would make it a pet. I'd find a little feeding thing for it, a little cage, place for it to sleep, you know. Of course.
Like, here, man, chill out.
No, I'd want to, what's your name?
Yeah.
Isn't it funny? They always say to you, what's your name? Well, what the fuck? How does that help anybody learn anything?
Yeah.
Other than the script, you know?
Seriously.
Another question would be more like to yourself, what is this?
Yeah.
Or what is that?
Yeah, I really wouldn't care to know its name, to be honest, if I saw an alien. That's not what I would ask it. I'd be like,
dude,
yo,
okay,
what?
But like, that thing could probably speak like a whole nother language. Like, we probably,
yeah, it's not like they're gonna understand it too.
It's gonna say like, blah, 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 and we're not gonna understand what the fuck it just said.
That's true.
Again, the sounds. There's
Google Translate not gonna be able to help.
There's no sound in the universe. If there was, it would be so deafening, you know.
Yeah. In space, there isn't like actual sound. There's nothing to reverberate off of. The only reason why we can hear anything is because we're here and it reverberates off certain things.
That's right. The physical
otherwise,
world.
It would keep going, but it can't.
It can't even exist.
What are your favorite movies to watch while high?
Well, high. Well, my favorite movie of all times, I haven't seen it for a long time, is Badlands by Martin Scorsese, not Martin Scorsese, but Terry Malick. And I love all of Terry Malick's movies. I'm a Terry Malick fan and a Quentin Tarantino fan. You know, Pulp Fiction is a genius movie. Anything Quentin Tarantino does to me, what's that? Came from Hollywood, was that that one? Anyway, the Tarantino book of movies. And then, you know, I like learning. There's those Korean movies that are genius.
Okay.
I mean, all the foreign, anything foreign, I love it. I lived in France for a while, so. I lived in France, but we went to the English-speaking theater to see French movies in subtitles. Yeah.
All right. So, Murphy, would you like to take this one?
All righty. Last question. What is your favorite weed strain?
I haven't found it yet.
That's a good answer. I like
that. Well, what effects...
What that's the strain. I haven't found it yet.
Oh, that's the strain?
No, I haven't found it yet. I'm still looking.
I was like, there's no way that Tommy Chong just pulled my leg that hard. Like, there's no way. That's great. But just real quick, though, after the podcast, there was just one thing I'd like to ask you after. But thank you for coming on again, for being on the 420 special. It was great and everything, of course. It's always great to have you, Tommy Chong. You're always welcome because you're fucking Tommy Chong. But is there anything you'd like to promote before we do and end the recording?
What's that?
Is there anything you'd like to promote before we end the recording? Anything new coming out?
I just want to wish the world... I forgot something. It was a well wish, that, but I forgot it. So
yeah.
Forget it.
Well, happy 420, everybody. But this is the 420 special. We have a new blog coming out pretty soon as well. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for watching.